Did you hear the prediction that by the year 2040, atheism will be the dominant belief or non-belief on the planet? And have you seen how the pro-abortion movement is flailing? We'll take all this up today, right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, you got it. You got it. Hear this quote from Dr. Nigel Barber, PhD, about where atheism is going by 2041. Oh, yeah. I'm trembling in my boots. Michael Brown, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire this Wednesday as we focus on the world, as we focus on moral and cultural issues, as we focus on what God is doing in the midst of this fallen world. To join the conversation, here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. I spent a good amount of time last night working on an article. I'll read some excerpts of it later in the broadcast. It's called The Moral An Intellectual Bankruptcy of the Pro-Abortion Movement. That's right, the moral and intellectual bankruptcy of the pro-abortion movement. You can read that by going to my website, askdrbrown.org, and then just clicking on the latest article there. I want to talk to you about a bunch of things. I want to talk to you about the rise of atheism and the rise of religious believers, the rise of atheists and of religious believers around the world. What about America? What does it mean? Where are things going? I want to talk about the pro-life movement, where that's going. And then I want to interact with you on another sensitive subject. I broached on it this week, but I want to talk about it in a little bit more depth as we have time today. And that is when it is right, when it is wrong to, quote, name names, when it is right to publicly differ with brothers and sisters or to confront false teaching or dangerous areas, when it's right, when it's wrong to be specific, to name names, what's supposed to be done behind closed doors, what builds unity, what produces division. We're going to talk about that as well. And I want to get your take on it. Because everything we do on this broadcast is done back with prayerful thought and is not just some, well, let's just throw this out and see where it goes. I mean, I may do that with some silly little topic and just get your feedback on something not particularly material. But we really try to use every minute of this broadcast for the glory of God and for your edification and to touch and help those who don't know the Lord. So I don't just do things to be controversial. I don't just do things to be sensational. Some might take it like that because we're dealing with lots of controversies, but that's the last thing in my mind. Oh, let's do this and be more controversial and get more people to listen. For what purpose? If it doesn't edify and help and move us in the right direction, for what purpose? Okay, very quickly, I want you to hear this prediction from Nigel Barber, an Irish biophysicist.
Nigel Barber, an Irish biopsychologist, predicts that by 2041, atheism will replace religion as the dominant belief, or lack thereof, in the world. His assertions are based on a study he recently conducted involving 137 countries. The author has said, atheists are more likely to be college-educated people who live in cities, and they are highly concentrated in the social democracies of Europe. Atheism thus blossoms amid influence where people feel economically secure. Religiosity is highest in impoverished areas, facing many disasters with low educational opportunities. As areas of the world become more stable, they will abandon their traditional beliefs.
Is it true? Oh, okay, he's a biopsychologist, not a biophysicist. Is it true that atheism is going to rise worldwide and become the dominant religious belief, non-belief, by 2041?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So, is it true that atheism is rising and is going to continue to rise until there are more atheists on earth than there are believers in any religion? Is that possible? Is this prediction by biopsychologist? What is a biopsychologist, by the way? Biopsychologist Nigel Barber in Ireland. Is it possible what he's saying is true? 866-348-7884. He does not say that, quote, religion will completely disappear by 2041, but rather, because of the changing demographics and more people getting educated, living in cities and with a higher quality of life, etc., that when that happens, countries like Japan, Sweden, that the society gets more and more secular. Could that be? He said, I never claimed that religion would disappear by 2041, but only that it would lose its present majority clout. Currently, about three-quarters of the world's inhabitants are religious in the sense of seeing religion as important in their lives. My estimate, he says, implies a less than 1% decline per year to the 50% transition to minority status. And then another article, January 28th, 2011, the model in terms of their predictive model, predicts religiosity gene. Yeah, a religiosity gene will dominate society. According to this study on the site phys.org, in the past 20 years, the Amish population in the U.S. has doubled, increasing from 123,000 in 1991 to 249,000 in 2010. The huge growth stems almost entirely from the religious culture's high fertility rate, which is about 6 children per woman on average. At this rate, the Amish population will reach 7 million by 2,100, 44 million by 2,150. Now, of course, people do drop out, but then when you have that many kids, it more than makes up for it. How about the Orthodox Jewish world? How about Christians in many other parts of the world outside of America? Well, even some in America as well with larger families. How about Muslims with their large families? According to a study by Robert Rauthorn, emeritus professor of economics at Cambridge University, he's developed a model that shows that the genetic components that predispose a person towards religion are currently hitchhiking on the back of the religious cultural practice of high fertility rates. Even if some of the people who are born to religious parents defect from religion and become secular, the religion genes they carry, which encompass other personality traits such as obedience and conservatism, will still spread throughout society according to the model's numerical stimulations. He says, provided the fertility of religious people remains on average higher than that of secular people, the genes that predispose people towards religion will spread. The bigger the fertility differential between religious and secular people, the faster this genetic transformation will occur. So he's saying the opposite of what this other professor says. He's saying that, no, you're going to have more and more religious people on the earth for two reasons: the birth rate and then what he calls the religiosity gene, that things are passed down to the children from the parents that make them more religious. 866-348-7884. Listen to this statement. This is from Edward Falzon. Joey, play clip number 6.
There is abundant evidence on the non-existence of the Judeo-Christian God.
Yeah.
And this is something that can be disproven and has been disproven archaeologically and historically. The Judeo-Christian God is the most investigated and examined God of history. You know, we spent the last 150 years, ever since there was the first real critical exegesis of the Bible in the mid-19th century in Germany. Anyone with a spade went into Israel and Syria and Egypt and started digging up, trying to find proof. And of course, what they found was not only no evidence in favor of the Bible, but everything they found contradicted the biblical account.
Yeah, talk about ridiculous overstatement. Nothing that archaeologists found confirmed the Bible. Everything disproved it. And you know, it's the overstatements like that that make you realize how bankrupt the larger positions are. But what about this idea? What about this idea that it's not a matter of disproving the existence of any God, any deity? How is one going to do that? Even if you could go to the every corner of the universe, that doesn't mean the deity doesn't exist outside of it. But what about the claim, well, you can demonstrate that the Judeo-Christian God is not real. You can demonstrate his non-existence. I mean, some of you are sitting there shaking your head like, what world does this guy live in? Jesus changed my life. God touched me and transformed my life. God answers prayer, prayed in secret that only he knows, and answers them publicly. God speaks through his word, and on and on and on. But this is what he and many atheists believe. Here's a further point. This is from Cara Santa Marie on this issue of religion, science, morality, and atheism. Go ahead, number 7, Joey.
It's not just a, is there a God, is there not a God? But, you know, religion is not just, I believe in God, that's that. There's so much dogma that comes right along, especially when we talk about Judeo-Christian religions. There's so much dogma that comes along with it.
All right, so once again, can you say, well, the dogma is false? All of the dogma about this God of the Bible is false, and because we clearly see it is false, then we can throw out the idea of this God actually existing. Because if his followers make wrong claims about him, and that's how we're supposed to know him, then obviously the whole thing should be thrown out. How do we respond to that spiritually and intellectually? We do know that there has been a rise in atheism in America, in England, in recent years. We know that many people have just dropped out of church, but they don't identify as atheists. But there is a rise in atheism. Here's a story from 1 year ago from Kimberly Winston, Religious News. She says, religiosity is on the decline in the U.S. and atheism is on the rise, according to a new worldwide poll. The poll called the Global Index of Religiosity and Atheism found that the number of Americans who say they are religious dropped from 73% in 2005 to 60% in 2012. At the same time, the number of Americans who say they are atheists rose from 1% to 5%. The poll was conducted by Wynn Gallup International and is based on interviews with 50,000 people from 57 countries with 5 continents. Participants were asked, quote, irrespective of whether you attend a place of worship or not, would you say you are a religious person, not a religious person, or a convinced atheist? Again, the numbers dropped from 73% to 60% 2005 to 2012, saying that they were religious, and those saying they were convinced atheists rose from 1% to 5%. What do we make of that? How do we interpret that? Are we expecting greater and greater apostasy until the end of the age? Is this just another temporary blip? Has atheism already demonstrated that it doesn't work? What I mean is, we have had thousands and thousands of years of human civilization here on the earth. There has been enough opportunity to reject the idea of a god or gods or a supernatural world or other world outside of this natural world. And where it has taken hold nationally, it has failed miserably. Failed miserably in the former Soviet Union. And you see the rise of religiosity there, the Russian Orthodox Church and other forms. In Judaism within the Soviet Union, you see the rise of religiosity, even Islam within the former Soviet Union rising. You see countries like Albania that declared themselves to be the first atheistic country. You have communist China. And in every case, the atheism has failed. It's not just that communism has failed, But atheism has failed. British scholar Alistair McGrath actually wrote a book a few years back called The Twilight of Atheism, as he talks about the world decline of atheism. But what are we to make of these concepts? Why, in fact, are people getting, quote, less religious in America? Why is atheism on the rise? Again, my heart goes out to atheists, even those who are hardened and angry, because I know they're ultimately rejecting the very source of life. And Nancy coming to faith at the age of 19, my bride of 37 years, as a hardcore atheist, she's helped me to understand the atheist mindset over the years. God's grace will penetrate many hearts. What's happening now? Back with your calls.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
There's no supernatural dimension. There's no rescue coming to us from the unseen. There's no such thing as salvation. And we are as alone as other species are in this struggle.
Isn't that so sad? To hear the voice of the late Christopher Hitchens. 866-348-7884. We're going to be talking about the flailing of the pro-abortion movement and the rise of pro-life sentiments in America a little bit later in the broadcast. Right now, we've been focusing on something kind of an opposite parallel, the rise of atheism in America and different parts of the world, what to make of that. 866-34-TRUTH. Be sure to go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and click to read the latest article about the moral and intellectual bankruptcy of the pro-abortion movement, which just posted on Town Hall this morning. Also, all of our friends listening on WAVA FM all over D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Just a quick reminder that we are the featured ministry of the month this year, which means that there are all kinds of giveaways from our ministry. So go to the WAVA website to find out more about that. And tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, episode number 5 of Answering Your Toughest Questions airs, as we're getting more and more into the meat of Jewish objections to Jesus. We've been getting great reports from those viewing the show. So for viewing information, it's all on my website, AskDrBrown.org. If you do have DirecTV, by the way, DirecTV channel 378 is when you can watch the broadcast. All right, to the phones, starting with Lisa. We lost Lisa in Smithtown. I wanted to chat with Lisa because we used to live right next to Smithtown. Our kids went to a Christian school there, but no Lisa. Okay, Stephen in Manhattan. Hey, Stephen, thank you for calling The Line of Fire. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Michael. God bless you. I was trying to comment on that hilarious clip that you have with the guy talking about no archaeological evidence to support the Bible. It's so much. I wish people were a little bit more aware of what's going on in the Biblical Archaeological Review, which is a very, very excellent publication. There's profound evidence, even just within the last 5 or 10 years, that's been overflowing with, say, Sodom and Gomorrah. They found the ruins where Jezebel was thrown out the window with the dog Vader. They found a tomb of a family of Goliath. I mean, it just goes on and on. But almost every incident, and also in the New Testament, the finding of the Pilate's plaque in the city of Jerusalem. A lot of this was exposed when the war happened, and layers of things were just exposed. And now they have the original road that Christ went to Golgotha. It just doesn't end. And every time I get a new issue, it's a new discovery they made.
Yeah, so and Biblical Archaeology Review is not a fundamentalist Christian publication.
Not at
all. There are plenty of controversies that are printed there. And look, there are things that when we read biblical history and then archaeology, we're trying to see, okay, how does this work or how does this fit? Or there's some question marks. But the fact is, there's so many amazing detailed confirmations and is Israel's existence being mentioned at certain times with certain kings and inscriptions that tie in with what Scripture says. So for someone who really knows the Lord and is convinced the Scriptures are God's Word, they don't need archaeological confirmation, but it's always fascinating to see new discoveries and how they shed light on things in the biblical world.
I like it because it exposes the prejudice and hypocrisy involved in people that make such comments as that idiot on the phone. That it gives verification to it, indisputable. Now, you're right about Bar Magazine. And then one guy, actually, one of the contributors, wrote an essay saying that among the archaeological community, just like the paranormal among the scientific community, are looked down upon. Because it has either a paranormal or a religious aspect to it.
Right.
Scientists still have that childish Darwinian dribble that they're pushing, and they're still trying to push it. And it's been disproven all over the place.
Yeah, and one thing that I fully expect, and I've talked to other scientists about this because that's not my field, but I'm convinced that the more science continues to learn about the universe, about life, about the cell, about you name it in God's creation, the more difficult it's going to be an atheist. Hey, Stephen, sorry to cut you off there. Appreciate the call and the thoughts. Before I take other calls, let me just throw a thought out to you. Obviously, I can't prove this at all, but I was meditating on things, thinking about the death of Christopher Hitchens, one of the most outspoken, famous atheists of the generation, died of cancer last year. And I was thinking about what happened immediately after death. Now, you might say, well, he'd immediately find himself in flames of hell and realize his worst nightmares confirmed. And of course, that's possible. But that would almost confirm to him all of the wrong beliefs he had about God, as well as if he was just some kind of moral monster, the Jewish Christian God. And I thought, what if in a split second he could have seen every time that God revealed his love to him, every time that God revealed truth to him, every time he had an opportunity to believe, but because of hardness of heart or pride or love of the flesh, he said no. And suddenly he saw it and realized God is utterly right and I'm utterly wrong. It's a frightening thing to consider, is it not? All right, friends, would you stand with us? I just came back from Atlanta. Pastor is saying, Mike, we've got to do stuff in Atlanta and strengthen the pastors on moral issues, on issues with gay activism. We believe you can help us, you can equip us, as I just finished meetings there. We have constant requests. Can you come here? Can you speak on this campus? Can you do this? And the best way that we can multiply our efforts is with your help, with your funding. We can be on more radio stations. We can speak to more people. We can have more folks standing alongside helping us multiply these efforts. My thank you gift for your gift of any size is my DVD debate, 2 hours with Dr. James White on Calvinism, in which we really get into the issues, but in a godly, respectful spirit. It's normally $20. It's yours for your gift of any size, and we'll pay the postage. But stand with us. Help us however you can. Would you do that? 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. We also have a special resource offer on the homepage of our website. So go there to find out about a free download.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Matthew Henry said this, "This is at the bottom of our apostasy from him. Men forsake their duty to God because they stand in no awe of him, nor have any dread of his displeasure." So when people cast the concept of God from their midst, when they cast the concept of God from their lives, from the society, of course, lawlessness can reign all the more. And a healthy reverence of God and fear of God and recognition of who he is brings a change in life and conduct. Remember Genesis, the 20th chapter, Abraham thinks that Abimelech is going to be interested in his wife, Sarah. And he says, surely there's no fear of God in this place. In other words, there's not going to be a moral compass and moral base that would stop them from certain acts. 866-348-7884. Do you think as we get closer and closer to the end of the age, which could be 10 years from now or 100 years from now, may God hasten it, do you think that there's going to be more religion on the earth, both true and false, or more atheism on the earth? As you read scripture, as you have your own beliefs, I don't mean that your own beliefs determine things, but as you read scripture and come to your own conclusions, I should have said, do you believe that there will be an increase in atheism, or that the dominant views will be false beliefs, or that the dominant view will be the spread of the gospel through the entire world? Joey, get clip number 9 ready. We have seen in recent years the rise of the new atheists, but I see that also as part of a vacuum that has been left in America and different parts of the world, the vacuum left by lack of visitation of God in the midst of his people, the vacuum left by a lot of superficiality in the church, the vacuum left by a lot of hypocrisy, the vacuum left by the church getting too politicized, the vacuum left by a lack of power in our message, so we'd stand for something but didn't deliver the goods. Because of that, into that void, new atheism has risen up. Also, a lack of solid thinking in many Christian circles, a lack of ability to really understand Scripture and think through issues in a critical and productive way. Into that void, atheism has risen. Will it continue to rise, or is this just another preparation for a greater harvest of souls? Let's go back to the phones. David in Falls Church, Virginia. Thank you, David, for calling the line of fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. I was going to mention about, you know, one of the first lies that Satan said was that we could be like God. We could be God. He spread it from the garden. You know, they built the Tower of Babel. But then you brought on about, you know, this guy dying and that, and I wanted to share something with you. When I was 7 years old, I got caught underneath the garage door and I died. I saw my body on the ground and I rose up and it was dark and it was void. There was nothing there. And then all of a sudden, like a scroll, I saw every word, every thought, every action of my life up to that period of time. And then in came this bright light, this overwhelming love. And I went in among a couple people. There was like 3 or 4 people there, and I came into this great room, and there were people standing there in white, just row after row after row after row of people. It was more than they could count. It was like looking at a wheat field. But exactly what you said, every thought, every word, every action of my life, I saw. And, you know, that's exactly what he saw. He saw himself being presented the truth. He saw himself, because Yeshua said, you testify against yourself.
Yeah, David, just to jump in, that's a striking vision. And, of course, it's too late to pray for Christopher Hitchens, but there are plenty of atheists to pray for that they'd have that encounter with God now in this world while they can respond.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. Edward, if you happen to be listening in Shanghai right now, yeah, we actually played a quote from you. You could see that one of our listeners was not impressed with it, but just got a note that you're going to join me on the air. God willing, you may not say God willing, but I will. And yes, we should have a lively discussion by all means. I do hope that works out. 866-348-7884. Joey, get clip number 9 ready. And this is Daniel Dennett saying something very interesting, very profound, very sad.
The quandary that confronts any churchgoer is that by the good works, the very good works that they do for their church, they provide protective coloration for all the evil that some churches do, because they help to perpetuate the good name of churches, and so people are reluctant to criticize churches when they do evil, and they're forever excusing churches for doing evil, because after all, those are churches, those are religions, and we must respect them. If the mafia had just built a few more nursery daycare centers and hospitals, they would have been able to continue their evil deeds much more comfortably than they did.
Yeah, you know, this perception that the church, capital C, or churches representing the church, they are involved in acts of evil, that they are involved in, well, they do good, but then they do evil. Okay, there have been times in history where professing Christians and even organized Christian religion, that they have been involved in evil acts and evil deeds. There's no question that that has happened. And there's no question that with more power and finances, there is more corruption. But let's just think about this. Let's bring this down to earth. What city do you live in right now? Where are you located? Think of the local churches there. Think of those that are involved in doing good. Think of those that are helping the poor. Think of those that are doing outreach into rough parts of the community. Thinking those that are offering marriage seminars. Think of those that are helping send funds to meet needs around the world in areas hit by disaster, and on and on. Think of that, okay? Think of people that are being helped by being taught scripture, being taught godly ways to live, and as they're heeding this, they're not out committing all types of acts of crime, so on and so forth. People like me, who at the age of 15, shooting heroin, getting involved in all kinds of trouble, and then radically saved at the age of 16, while I wasn't getting in trouble in that way, I was obviously standing up for Jesus, brings certain opposition, but I wasn't breaking into houses. I wasn't stealing money from my father. I wasn't a lying, miserable, drug-using creep. All right, now, ask yourself, what acts of evil has that church committed? Come on. You may hear of a scandal here and there, and those scandals are horrific. I say, contrary to what Daniel Dennett said, atheist Daniel Dennett, it's the opposite, that Christians are held to a higher perspective, that Christians are held to a higher standard, that Christians are expected to live differently, and churches are expected to be different. So when there is some type of scandal, it shines all the more brightly because the page is expected to be white. That dark blot stands out all the more. If you heard that there was some sexual abuse thing going on in the midst of, some polygamous cult out in Utah, you'd be disturbed by it, but you say, yeah, that's what these weird cults do. If you heard that there was all types of extortion and violence in some inner city drug ring, you'd say, oh, what a shame, but that's what they do. But if you hear that a pastor was involved in some sex abuse scandal, your jaw drops all the more. Sadly, not as much as it used to drop because there have been more scandals. But those things stand out all the more because of the fact that even the world expects us to live differently. You know, Daniel Dennett has also said that It's such an amazing world we're in. He'd like to thank someone, but since there's no one to thank, he'll just try to make the world better for the next person. Well, on the one hand, it's a nice sentiment to try to make the world better, but of course, intuitively, we know there's something beyond us. That's why there's so much religion in the world, even false religion. 866-348-7884. Let's go back to the phones. Anthony in Newburyport, Massachusetts, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Anthony.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. I know you're talking about a lot of the new atheists, like you were just talking about Daniel Dennett. Well, obviously, like, a lot of them they try to use science to try to, like, prove atheism and disprove God. But actually, if you really think about it, atheism actually undermines science in a serious way because ultimately, if there is no God and there is no immaterial mind, then our brains are just a material process, and we are essentially just reacting to nature. We're not really reasoning right now. And in order to, like, do science, you need to have a mind that can reason and that can comprehend data and so forth. So actually, atheism actually seems to destroy science by denying the existence of, you know, free will. And really, there cannot be any reason on atheism because you're not really reasoning right now. You're just reacting to the laws of nature because your brain is essentially just particles in motion. And actually, you were just talking about Daniel Dennett. He actually denies the existence of human free will, I believe.
Yeah, and Anthony, of course, the point you make is an important one. Atheists certainly have an answer to that. But bottom line, it's how do we even know that anything is real? I mean, these are just neurons firing. How can we prove anything? What is, you could say, but science can demonstrate it. But how do we know the whole thing isn't ultimately some kind of delusion? And then when you go, and I'm saying from an atheist viewpoint, when you take it even further, what can science know and not know? When Anthony Flew gave up his atheism and became either a deist or a theist on some level, one of the things he said was that science is, the new atheists are using science to make determinations that science cannot make. For example, science cannot determine beauty or love or certain philosophical values or issues. Yeah. Those are outside of the purview of science. And yet I saw a video of Richard Dawkins debating John Lennox, two brilliant, highly educated men. And Richard Dawkins said something to the effect that vicarious atonement is unscientific. So, no, you get two different categories. Science doesn't interface with the issue of vicarious atonement. So it oversteps its bounds. And yes, as atheist philosopher Thomas Nagel has said, that naturalism really can't be true. Naturalism ultimately defeats itself on a certain level. And then, you know, I've talked to Nancy about this. Can you have a sense of purpose? Can you have a sense of destiny if there is no God? And she said, on a certain level, you can in this life. In other words, there's a purpose to life, but you have to fight off death and old age and deterioration and decay with everything you can, because that's all there is. So an ultimate purpose disappears, really. It isn't there. Ultimately, what's the purpose that a monkey has? What's the purpose that a fish has? In the larger scheme of things, there is none. They're just animals. And ultimately, that's all we are, just with a little bit bigger brain. So you're right. You're right, Anthony. All the more do we need to pray for God to open up hearts and minds and pray that God continues to allow more and more truth to be revealed scientifically that continues to point to him. And then I think, like anything else, we need to pray for humility. My biggest issue, thanks for the call, Anthony. My biggest issue was not addiction to drugs or specifically addiction to the needle. My biggest issue was pride. That was my biggest issue, to acknowledge that I was wrong. That was my biggest issue. And then a close second was the addiction to the needle and obsession with drugs and the lifestyle I was living. My own belief, As I read Scripture, I see a religious world at the end of the age, and I see counterfeit signs, wonders, and miracles, and I see great deception in the earth, and I see a Jewish Jerusalem welcoming the Messiah back. Now, does that mean that there will not be a lot of atheism on the earth? I can't prove that. I can't prove that. But I always feel bad for atheists when they make their great predictions, because I know ultimately we are puny little human beings, and God will reveal himself powerfully to the whole world. May he have mercy. May his love be poured out on those who sincerely or insincerely reject him. May his love and truth be poured out. May they humble themselves and find life.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, couple of special programming notes. Next week's broadcasts are going to be unique, and the first time we have ever done what we will be doing. It is a special vacation time where Nancy and I, with our daughters and their husbands and our four grandkids, are renting a cabin for 10. We've never done this together all in the same place in this way, and just planning on relaxation and family fun. And I'm putting together some special broadcasts for next week. Friday I'll be doing e-questions this next week, but I plan on playing parts of a teaching series I did, best teaching I've ever done on prayer and intercession. It's over 20 years old, so my voice is going to sound a little different. You're going to be edified. You're going to be blessed. You're going to be encouraged. You're going to be challenged. So tune in next week. Even if you miss parts of broadcast, make sure you catch everything online. And a reminder to all of my friends listening to me in Miami, there will be a change in our broadcasting time, all right? All of you listening to me right now on WHIM-AM, there will be a change in our broadcasting time. This show will broadcast instead 11 to 12, all right? And then if there's sufficient interest, I will periodically have a call-in day that will be exclusively for all of you in Miami. So stay tuned. That change will be coming early next month. 866-348-7884. Okay. I am completely switching topics now. Next hour, I'm going to be dealing more with issues concerning abortion. So, again, you can catch that broadcast later today, archived online on our website, AskDrBrown.org. Just click on the latest audio. Oh, and have you signed up for our Israel tour yet? You've been thinking about it? Sign up now. Dive in now. The more folks we get signing up earlier, the more it helps us in our planning. All the info is on my website, AskDrBrown.org, right on the homepage. It's going to be the tour of a lifetime next May, but now's the time to get your deposit in. But switching subjects here, I've talked about this a little during the week, but I want to bring it up again. I am careful in terms of, quote, naming names on the air, meaning if I differ with someone's position, I would rather just talk about the position and not the person. Especially if they're not well known, then I don't want to be unfair to them. If you posted a comment on my Facebook page and it was public, but that's the place you posted it, and I think you made a terrible point, I'm not going to give your whole name on the air and say so-and-so said this. What I may say is a first name or someone on Facebook, because I want to protect people as much as possible, even when I differ. And I know that in the body, there's often, let's just say we can be too quick to draw conclusions. And I might say one word about a particular ministry or teacher or leader, and I differ with this, and I'll do it because it's public. They were on national television. They made a major statement. Everybody's saying, have you seen this? Have you heard this? The audio clips and the videos are going viral. So I'm now going to respond to it. But often we take that one error, that one bad segment, and we write the person off entirely, rather than doing what Jonathan Edwards said we should do with regard to revival. But it applies in everything. Don't judge by the part, but by the whole. It's possible someone made a mistake on the air. It's possible someone didn't express themselves clearly, and immediately when they got off the air, they said, oh, I blew it. I sounded like an idiot. I sounded like I denied this, 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 and this. And then they immediately correct it, and they send out emails, and they post things publicly, and you realize, man, I've never heard him say that before in 1,000 messages, so I'm not going to throw that person out based on that one statement. So that's why I'm careful about naming names. On the flip side, if there's a public disagreement going on, I find it helpful to address it in a constructive public way. Are we going to put our heads in the sand and make believe it doesn't exist? Are we going to have factions? I'm of Mike Brown. I'm of this one. I'm of that one. Or are we going to say, hey, we're part of the same body? We're talking about fellow believers now. We're not talking about people who deny the faith. Hey, we're part of the same body. There's some public disagreements going on. Let's talk about them constructively. So that's what I've sought to do with my Calvinist friends. That's what I've sought to do with those in the cessationist camp who say that the sign gifts of the New Testament, the miraculous gifts, and those things are not for today. So as we were getting calls and questions about Pastor John MacArthur's upcoming Strange Fire Conference, I've sought to interact with some of his folks, and ultimately the goal would be with Pastor MacArthur directly. At the same time, and even before that, because public statements were being made, I said, hey, here's what I appreciate about Pastor MacArthur. He's my senior in the Lord. Here's where I honor him, and I'm so pleased with this, 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 and I say amen to this, this, this. Now, here's where I differ. Here's where I differ. A lot of people have been really thrilled for that. A lot of people have been really pleased that we're having this type of public discussion. Others have said, how dare you attack a man of God? No, no, see, that's not it. That's not it. I could just as well say, yeah, but there are people on the other side that feel that Pastor MacArthur is attacking their friends and colleagues. I would rather say it's not a matter of attacking anyone. It's a matter of having public, constructive dialogue because we're part of the same body. And I, for one, am not willing to put my head in the sand as if these differences don't exist. Rather, I'd say, hey, let's learn from each other. Let's sit down and talk. And if we're not able to do that, or that's not the choice that others want to make, then let's have public dialogue about public statements. Just like if I say something on my show, if you came on the next hour and said, hey, I heard Dr. Brown say this. I think he made a great point. I love it, but I differ with him on this. Well, go for it. And then have discussion in a healthy way because the differences exist. Let's be constructive about it. Now, obviously, it's the end of the hour. I can't take calls on that now, but let me know your thoughts. Let me know if you find it more helpful or more harmful. I'm just curious to see how it is ministering to you or not. If you want to talk about it, you can call in now, and maybe I'll get to some of these calls in the next hour as well. Would you stand with us? Would you help? We need many more torchbearers. We are challenged on every front with the open doors the Lord is setting before us, and we really need your help. And by God's grace, every dollar, every $1,000, everything that's invested goes to bear much fruit, and you can share with us in it. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. And my thank you gift for your gift of any size is my two-hour debate on DVD with Dr. James White on Calvinism, recorded earlier this year at Southern Evangelical Seminary. You'll love it, and you'll love the spirit in which we have our differences. My bottom line today, let us pray for the rising number of atheists and other countries. Let us pray for divine encounter and humility on their part to meet God while they have breath. Did you hear the prediction that by the year 2040, atheism will be the dominant belief or non-belief on the planet? And And have you seen how the pro-abortion movement is flailing? We'll take all this up today, right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast today. Just spent an hour talking about atheism. I'm about to dive into some telltale signs in the flailing ranks of the pro-abortion movement. I think you'll be encouraged by that. To get in the discussion, the number to call is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. To read my article on the moral and intellectual bankruptcy of the pro-abortion movement, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, and just click on latest article. I think you'll find it to be tremendously eye-opening. 866-34-TRUTH. I just want to speak with someone very, very quickly. This will be kind of a teaser for a future discussion that we'll be having. Edward Falzon, are you there, sir?
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Doing very well. Where are you right now?
I am in Shanghai. It's 3 a.m., and I apologize if I sound seedy or grumpy.
No, actually, you're an atheist, correct?
I am. Yes.
So I guess you're always kind of grumpy. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. You know, actually, when I broadcast live from Hong Kong earlier this year, I was broadcasting from 3 to 5 every morning in the midst of a full day of teaching. So thanks for being up. Okay, we definitely want to set up a time, sir, where you can come on and we can have a whole hour or maybe more to interact on your beliefs or non-beliefs, but we're just going to throw this out now. And then I just downloaded your ebook, going through the first 5 books of Moses. I just downloaded that last night and started to go through that. So I'll be ready for you. But just tell us your basic thesis. And this is going to frustrate our listeners because we're going to be in and out. We got a quick little segment, and I'm about to switch subjects. But to kind of give a little preview for our listeners, what is your own viewpoint on the existence or non-existence of the God of the Scriptures?
Well, just briefly, the book is called "Being Gay is Disgusting," and it's not an analysis of the Bible. It's simply a retelling, a shortened, summarized, and informal retelling of the 5 books of Moses. So. That's not an analysis. It's just a more humorous and less respectful version of the books of Moses. Now, my position on the biblically described God, having read 5 copies of the Torah now and sifted through a Hebrew, a transliterated Hebrew version as well, is that the biblical God, biblically described God, does not exist. If there is a God that's out there that exists, it's not the one that's described in the Bible. It's actually archaeologically, logically impossible, scientifically impossible. But of course, my field normally I talk about morals with my talks around the USA and Canada. I talk about morality and how morality is not that different. It's just perceived origins of morality is often very different between Christians and atheists.
All right, hey, I've just got to jump in. You've laid things out for us clearly, and I very much appreciate you calling in at 3 in the morning. God willing, we'll set up a time and do a whole hour or two if you can coordinate it with being up in the middle of the night, and we'll talk these things through in a gentlemanly way. I know you will. I certainly will. Get some sleep, and may the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob reveal himself to you in your dreams. Look forward to talking, sir.
Cleansing flame, send the
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, that was an interesting call from a gentleman named Edward Falzon. We just connected with him, in the last 18 hours or less? And he immediately said, sure, I'll come on the air and we'll discuss these things. So he's an atheist. And we are looking to set up an entire program, maybe do two whole hours with him. Maybe I'll get one of my friends on to join me who's debated atheists over the years. And listen, friends, we've got nothing to be ashamed of and nothing to worry about. 866-348-7884. Before I begin to talk to you about what's happening in the pro-abortion movement, it is Wednesday. On Wednesday, we focus on the world, on moral and cultural issues. Before I switch over to that subject, I want to encourage you that we're on the side of truth, that we never have anything to fear. All of my studies were at secular universities, Queens College and New York University in New York. All of my studies with professors who did not believe what I believed. Here and there, there might be a religious Jew, but most of them were more secular. Some were very anti-scripture, anti-fundamentalist belief, some even atheists. So my beliefs were challenged constantly. And then I was constantly challenged by my religious Jewish friends, rabbis and others. So I had my faith as a Jewish follower of Jesus severely tested, challenged intellectually and emotionally in terms of the appeal of the Jewish community and being faithful and loyal to them, along with the intellectual challenge, and on and on and on. It was very real and very intense, but the more I took the challenges on head on, the more my confidence grew. We have answers. We have answers. Now, I'm not a scientist. I have certain scientific understanding and information, and I understand enough of how things work to be convinced that the more discoveries scientists make, the more they will recognize the existence of God. It'll be impossible to rationally deny that. But the fact is, I don't have all of the information, but I know people who have information. You may not be able to answer the rabbis, but you know me, and by God's grace, we've provided solid answers for the rabbis. So never run from questions. I don't mean that everyone should get into every debate, because you might face things that get you in over your head, and now you're struggling, and you decide you're going to be the savior of the whole world, and you're online, and you're interacting with Muslims and with atheists and with religious Jews and with Hindus and with New Agers and with Mormons and with everybody else, and your head's spinning. Well, no, spend quality time with God in His Word and share the gospel with those whose hearts are open. But then if you focus on particular areas and you hit a wall, don't be discouraged, because there are others in our family, in the body, who do have answers, who've done the study, who've put in the decades of hard, teeth-breaking work, and they can provide you with solid truth. Okay, before I switch subjects, let me take one more call on atheism. Reverend Tom in Boston, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you this afternoon?
I'm blessed, sir. Thank you. Blessed by the God that the atheists don't know.
Well, you know, I found something, Dr. Brown, that might be of interest to you that I don't know if you had seen it a few weeks ago off of Reuters, and I'll try and be as brief as possible with it. It had to do with plants being able to do complex arithmetic calculations. And I don't know if you had seen this, but let me just read it to you briefly. Plants do complex arithmetic calculations to make sure they have enough food to get them through the night. A new research published in the Journal of eLife shows scientists at Britain's John Innes Center said plants adjust their rate of starch consumption to prevent starvation during the night when they are unable to feed themselves with energy from the sun. They can even compensate for unexpected early light, and they do this by way of an internal clock that is inside of them. This was a really kind of an astounding discovery that scientists had made. And it shows that the this is the first concrete example in a fundamental biological process of such sophisticated arithmetic calculations that they were able to determine that the plant is able to do. Now, the interesting thing with this is that during the night, mechanisms inside the leaf measure the size of the starch store in and estimate the length of time until dawn, and information about time comes from this internal clock, much like is in a human body. Well, I started sharing this with some of atheists that I do know, and they tried to tell me evolution, and I said, okay, said, I'll accept that, except how did the first plant know that it was going to need this complex formula of arithmetic to get it through the night?
Right.
And so then they didn't have an answer for it. And I said, well, when you go ahead.
No, no, it's just that's the inevitable problem with so many evolutionary theories, that the species would have died out before it made the adjustments that it needed to make. And then where did it get the understanding, the intelligence to make certain adjustments? And, you know, some have pointed out that everything would have had to happen at the same time and so on. And so it does become intellectually bankrupt in many ways. The problem is your average Christian doesn't have the information to refute that. You know, when we're confronted with someone who knows a lot of science and who has a lot of information and who tells us it all fits in sequence and it all makes perfect sense, especially if they have a nice British accent, a lot of times we're intimidated by that. But the more that we do study and the more that we learn, I am convinced that things like this will be discovered more and more. Just like DNA, intelligent information does not come from nothing. So the idea that the universe is that nothing created everything, that creates an obvious problem. And then the idea that intelligent information comes from nothing, it does not come from an intelligence. Well, all of our intelligence tells us that can't be true. Then the whole idea that there was allegedly junk DNA, and you see the whole thing's kind of a mixture. Now people are realizing, whoa, that has a function that we just didn't understand before. So, it's almost like, you're alone on some desert island. You're the only person on the island. You're an atheist, and you wake up in the morning, and you were out there the night before, and now you wake up in the morning. There's no one else on the island, and all the rocks have come together in a long sentence spread out across the island that you follow and read, and it says, so you really think I don't exist? You really think these rocks are just here by coincidence? And it's this long thing. It's like, okay, there's a message there, and at a certain point, you come to the conclusion, a lot of it is simply, I won't humble myself and admit that I'm accountable to someone else, or there's an authority beyond me.
I agree with you with everything that you have said, but I think back to something that you had said just a moment ago, that oftentimes we feel that maybe we're not equipped because we're speaking with somebody with various degrees or with a great British accent or something. And, but as I think about it, just this very simple piece that I picked up off of Reuters, you don't need to know a lot of science. You just ask the question, how did the first plant know that it was going to need arithmetic and able to do that for the next 24 hours? So it could survive the next 24 hours.
Yeah, and again, that similar phenomena have to be explained throughout the entire natural world. Hey, real quick, I've got a break. What was the name of that article again?
The title of it, Dr. Brown, is Square Roots, Scientists Say Plants Are Good at Math.
Got it.
And that was off of Reuters. Okay. I'd say within the last few weeks, Dr. Brown.
Got it. All right. We'll look for it. You know, one of the most fascinating things is bees finding honey. and so yes. on, or bees, excuse me, not finding honey, they produce honey, but bees finding sources of nutrition for them. And you just watch on YouTube, you know, how bees calculate. But when I first saw this, we were watching it with our daughters, and our older daughters, no, it just seems so preposterous that the bee flies back, he's found some good flowers, whatever, and he, you know, the scout bee flies back, and he does what looks like a little dance. And what he's telling all the bees is, okay, you go a half mile straight, and then you turn left 45-degree angle. Then you go another 300 yards here, and then you turn right. And you think, no, that's crazy. But in point of fact, go to YouTube. Look up, you know, bees calculating. You think, okay, that, and that just evolved. They just, and how did they get to the food to survive before they learned to calculate? All right, we'll be back.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Put a clinic out on 30. It paid for itself in the first month. It was a profit center, and we were well on the way to opening more clinics. As a matter of fact, our plan was to open 3 abortion clinics in 1983 so I could be a millionaire in 1984.
Oh, it's not about money. No. It's not about money. The abortion industry does not exist to make money. It's just about helping women. Oh, so it's only religious leaders who get corrupted by money. Is that it? 866-34-TRUTH. We talked a little bit about atheism, but we're switching topics now to the flailing nature of the pro-abortion movement. 40 years ago, Roe v. Wade passed. Looked like that Supreme Court ruling, I shouldn't say passed, the Supreme Court Roe v. Wade ruling legalizing abortion on demand for any reason at any time of the pregnancy. That was it. I mean, there's no way the tide's going to turn on that, and especially young people, more and more are going to buy into that, and more promiscuous and less sharing family and religious values and so on. Obviously, they're going to turn the tide with abortion. Many other countries around the world have abortion laws almost as liberal as America, some just as liberal, and not much opposition from the society. And yet, there's been a constant grassroots opposition and now a rising tide. 866-348-7884. And the moral and intellectual bankruptcy of the pro-abortion movement is being increasingly revealed. Listen to what MSNBC TV host Melissa Harris Perry had to say.
When does life begin? I submit the answer depends an awful lot on the feeling of the parents. A powerful feeling, but not science.
I didn't make that up. Who would make that up? Life begins based on the feeling of the parents. Well, her point was, her larger point was that if you're expecting a child and wanting a child, you'll feel one way about that pregnancy versus if it was an unwanted child, an unexpected pregnancy or something. But what does that have to do with when life begins? When the feeling of the parent, where does that lead? Where does that lead? So let me tell you, on this Wednesday, as we focus on the world, on moral and cultural issues, let me tell you where we stand today and why there's a rising tide of pro-life sentiments and sensibilities exposing the utter bankruptcy of the pro-abortion position. You could read my whole article on this on Town Hall by going to AskDrBrown.org and just clicking on the latest article. I really encourage you to read it and share it with your friends. So the pro-abortion side is now faced with the following. They're faced with the beautiful reality of 3D and 4D ultrasounds, making clear that the fetus in the womb is really a carefully formed, developing baby. It is now impossible to deny that the little one seen with such clarity on the screen is a human life that is about to be snuffed out. That's why, what is it, 75 or 80% of women who see an ultrasound of their baby before having an abortion end up not having the abortion? The pro-abortion side is now faced with the brutal reality of the houses of horror run by men like Dr. Kermit Gosnell and others, with the unavoidable conclusions that, one, the same doctors who killed babies in the womb had no problem killing babies outside the womb, and two, there's virtually no difference, no moral difference between killing a 20-week-old baby in the safety of its mother's womb and killing it seconds after it emerges from the womb. Pro-abortion side is also faced with moving stories from abortion survivors like Gianna Jessen. They even have their own network called the abortionsurvivors.com. Pro-abortion side is also faced with a younger generation that values fairness, equality, and the rights of the victim, although this is often more gut-level than rational, leading many young people to the wrong side of the homosexuality debate. It also explains why so many are becoming pro-life. Also, they're faced with court rulings against Obamacare's pro-abortion mandates. They're faced with undercover videos by Lila Rose and others revealing the greed and heartlessness of abortion providers. Hey, Matt, you should send a copy of this article to Lila and her team also. So there is a lot that is coming against the pro-abortion position. And the woman simply saying, well, it's my body, it's my right to choose. Now, please recognize that I am aware that there are very difficult cases, and some of you agonized about having an abortion and have felt horrific ever since. I want you to know there is mercy at the cross. I want you to know it's not just some religious hype and religious sloganism. There is mercy at the cross. Jesus paid for the sin of abortion as well. And even though you cannot recover that life in this world, you can help many others to make right decisions. And then, if you know the Lord, you can be with your little one forever. And those of you that have had abortions and know the Lord, and when we talk about this, it opens up old wounds. Rather than turn the broadcast off, turn it to prayer. Turn my words to prayer as we discuss these things, because something is happening in America. And yet, sadly, a lower percentage of Americans today say that we need to do something about abortion. In other words, at the same time that pro-life sentiments and sensibilities are rising, with that, we also see a different tendency, namely that more Americans are apathetic to that. We come back. I'm going to talk to you about some of the shocking, shameful things taking place on the pro-abortion side, revealing the bankruptcy of the position. You know, when you make an argument, someone just starts yelling and screaming at you, you see they don't have much substance in their response. That is the way things are unraveling and unfolding in the pro-abortion side. But sadly, tens of millions of Americans still support the ideology to the cost of more than 1 million babies a year here in America. Do you believe in the work that we're doing? Are you thankful to God that we're on the air? Would there be a void if this broadcast was not here and I was not speaking to you by radio and by internet 5 days a week? Well, then stand with us. Become a monthly supporter. Become a torchbearer. Or help us with a one-time gift. Be as generous as you can. But everyone do what you can. And my gift of appreciation, my thank you gift to each of you this week is my two-hour debate with Dr. James White on Calvinism recorded earlier this year at Southern Evangelical Seminary. You'll find it eye-opening. You'll find it super instructional for both sides. And you'll be blessed by the gracious spirit in which it was conducted. It's only $20 plus postage. It's yours for your gift of any size. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. We'll be back with some real shockers.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, things are happening that many did not expect to see happen, namely a turn in sentiments towards pro-life. Legislation now has took place in Texas and forthcoming in other parts of the country, making abortions after 20 weeks illegal, calling for greater regulation of abortion clinics and so on. Of course, they're small steps when you look at the massive horror of abortion and the toll on babies and the toll on mothers and fathers and our society. But things are happening. There is a shift in tide in many ways. 866-348-7884. And as I wrote in my town hall article, in the wake of a rising tide of pro-life sentiments and sensibilities in America, the utter bankruptcy of the pro-abortion position is being revealed, especially in its more militant forms. And I want to give you some examples of that. And Joey, let's get clip number 14 ready. All right. More and more is being revealed in terms of what's happening behind the scenes. More and more is being revealed in terms of the horrors of abortion. The more we see 3D and 4D ultrasounds and what the babies really look like, the more we understand that the more we see the horrors, especially of some of these late-term abortion doctors who had no problem killing a baby outside the womb just as easily as inside the womb. The media has tried to not report on this, the secular media, but these things are still unavoidably coming before our culture. And many young people who have a heart for fairness and equality and for the victim, even though they often have not thought through the issues and come out on the wrong side of things, for example, with homosexuality, many are embracing a pro-life position. So just to give you the background to this, this is a student investigative team at Live Action, and they found Planned Parenthood of Bloomington, Indiana, covering up the sexual abuse of a 13-year-old girl. So let's play this clip.
How old are you?
I'm 13.
Okay. In the state of Indiana, you have to have a parent's signature to get an abortion.
And I would want to know who was the father.
Mm-hmm. In the state of Indiana, anyone 13 years and younger, there has to be a report done to CPS, you know.
But he's not, as old, I mean, he might be.
Doesn't matter.
A lot older, but he doesn't act a lot older, you know? And I act a lot older than I am, so it works out because
yeah.
He might be 30.
Yeah, and what Planned Parenthood is going to do is help cover. Yeah, well, we don't have to report this. The employee was fired after this. How many times does this go on? And let's play clip 15, Joey, as soon as it's ready. This is the second part. So this is a live video that was secretly shot. This is what's been done more and more and more to expose what's happening, the corruption behind the closed doors. All right, go ahead.
Okay. I didn't hear the age. I don't want to know the age.
Okay.
It could be reported as rape.
Oh, okay.
And that's child abuse.
Oh.
Okay.
So if I just say, I don't know who the father was, but he's one of the guys at school or something?
Right.
Okay.
Just... you know, you've seen him around, you know, he's 14, he's in your grade and whatever. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's that problem. Solved.
Solved. You told me 13 years old and I didn't hear it. No, you are required by law to report it. No. I'm an abortion provider. We're going to make some money here. What a shame. Let it be revealed and let there be repentance and life.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I did have it correctly in my notes. I just didn't follow it there. Yet what was being covered up was that they said it was a 30-year-old man, just now instead of some 14-year-old kid in school. But again, the horrific cover-up. No surprise, though. No surprise. Why would we expect there to be some kind of high ethic, lofty ethic among Planned Parenthood employees? 866-34-TRUTH. So what has the pro-abortion side offered in response, to the rising tide of pro-life sentiments and sensibilities? Well, Planned Parenthood has dropped its pro-choice moniker, which was once considered an impregnable winning concept. Now it has adopted the hopelessly self-defeating, "Your baby will thank you," as I have pointed out, only if the baby manages to escape the Planned Parenthood clinic alive. The pro-abortion side has offered completely inane statements by the media, including this one that I quoted from Melissa Harris Perry. By the way, she's the same MSNBC host who wore tampon earrings to protest the Texas abortion laws. Again, to quote her directly, "When does life begin? I submit the answer depends an awful lot on the feeling of the parents. A powerful feeling, but not science. The problem is that many of our policymakers want to base sweeping laws on those feelings." Oh, I didn't know that policymakers wanted to base laws primarily on feelings, not on science. Hey, if you're going to do it based on science and based on is this baby a baby, let's look at the ultrasound. That's going one direction and one direction only. That's called the direction of pro-life. You even have statements like this, absolutely murderous statements by so-called medical ethicists. I mean, what an oxymoron. Leading to outlandish headlines like this in Britain's Telegraph: "Killing babies no different from abortion, experts say." Yeah, the headline attributes this to experts, medical ethicists, no less. The article continues, "Parents should be allowed to have their newborn babies killed because they are, quote, morally irrelevant, and ending their lives is no different to abortion," a group of medical ethicists linked to Oxford University has argued. And then the pro-abortion side has come up with pathetic ads like the one celebrating the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade and featuring black actor Mechad Brooks. Sorry for making his name Hebrew with the C-H there. The ad was so dreadful that Eric Metaxas commented, "When I first watched this ad, I thought this has to be a spoof. It employs the ugly racial stereotype of a smooth-talking black predator celebrating his freedom to use women at zero cost to himself. Hey, baby, hook up with me and then go have an abortion. Are they kidding? No. This was no spoof." The pro-life tide is rising, and as it does, it's revealing the bankruptcy, morally and intellectually, of the pro-abortion side. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Texas, but we'll go instead to Robert in San Francisco. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome.
All right. I wanted to suggest a very cool educational resource for pro-lifers. It's a show called Life Report. It started off as a podcast around 2008. And they really seriously weigh both sides, the pro-life arguments and the pro-choice arguments, to kind of find the strongest cases for both sides and then show how the pro-life side wins out.
Got it. All right. So where do folks find that?
Well, iTunes, YouTube, Life Report, or ProLifePodcast.net.
All right. Everybody get that? ProLifePodcast.net. One word, of course. ProLifePodcast.net. And I'm actually looking at the website right now. So you're saying this will go through arguments on both sides. Here's an endorsement by Alan Schliemann, speaker trainer with Stand to Reason. He says, "Life Report is a must for anyone seeking a timely and insightful analysis of current pro-life issues. Robert, how old are you?
I'm 20.
20. Obviously, you can't speak for your entire generation, but in your lifetime, have you seen a shift in views among your peers or not?
I've actually never had a chance to talk to people about it. I've kind of been in and out of college for a little while, working mostly. Mm-hmm. I can't really say about the, you know, general culture or my friends. I don't have that many close friends right now that I would be able to talk to that about.
Got it. All right. Well, hey, I appreciate the candid answer and keep giving out the good resources. May the Lord be with you out there in San Francisco. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. Steven in Clearwater, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
God's blessing. And Dr. Brown, I just want to let you know that I have been certified as a FLEES teacher. That's family living, including sex education. And worked for many years in New York City public schools, challenging the comprehensive sex education programs.
How did you manage to do that and keep your job?
I worked in a very violent school, and they were so busy putting out fires that I was pretty autonomous in the classroom.
Wow!
They told me I had to teach about condoms, so I did. I explained to the kids first of all that the condoms come in little sealed aluminum foil packets, and they have to be shipped. See, when they tell you about their reliability, the testing is done at point of production, not at point of sale. In other words, they test it at the factory, but they ship it in metal container cars. You know what happens when you take latex in a little metal foil packet in a little box and you put it into a big semi-truck in the summer? It cooks it, and in the winter, it freezes. And both take the integrity and destroy the integrity of the latex.
Huh.
And they know that at point of sale, sitting in a drugstore or whatever, that the failure rate is really 1 out of 3. So Planned Parenthood, a devious and horrible situation, come in, convince the kids it's their right to have sex, but they have to have safe sex, knowing mm-hmm. full well that 1 out of 3... eventually, these young girls in high school, junior high school, will become pregnant and go there for their abortion.
All right. So,
tip of the iceberg.
All right. Now, let me just ask this real quick. How the kids you were dealing with in public schools? How old were they when they got sexually active on average? What were the youngest ones?
I taught for over 30 years, and I saw a paradigm shift and. In terms of immorality, drug usage, and so forth and so on. Back when I was in college, kids were experimenting with drugs and sex in college. Then dropped down to high school, junior high school. Now you can have kids who are late elementary, middle school age. It's a heartbreaker. It's a terrible cultural impact where the church has an impact on the culture, but the culture has certainly impacted the church.
And what do you attribute the massive shift to, Stephen?
We took our prayer, the Bible, the Ten Commandments out of school. And when somebody asked me about these things, I said, and it's interesting. We took our prayer, Ten Commandments, and the Bible. Now we have guns, drugs, and condoms. What do you think was better? It's because of the immorality, because of the, it's really disturbing that we have all these arguments on either side. There are facts. There are incredible facts. Latex is a lattice. Under a microscope, it looks like a weave pattern, like a material. And the natural pores, the spaces in this weave pattern, are 5 microns. But an AIDS virus is 1/10 of a micron. In other words, the virus is 50 times smaller than the pores in the latex. They absolutely don't stop AIDS transmission, HIV/AIDS. They don't even stop chlamydia, which is a very tiny bacteria. Mm. And even if they could, they still have to be handled, taken on, taken off, tailing out pubic hair, leaving spaces. And what kid, a teenager, doesn't even pick up his clothes off the floor, is going to put this on, handle this, and so forth? You know, it's absolutely horrible that we are not only sexualizing the kids, they're lying to them, telling them that they can have safe sex, And even if they don't get pregnant, they don't get a disease, there's a terrible impact on a young girl having sex. There's a, you know, there's a moral implications, there's self-esteem implications, there's so many things going on. But the sad thing for me is, why isn't there people in the pro-life movement exposing the fact that condoms are ineffectual against pregnancy, and they certainly don't stop the transmission of the AIDS virus?
Stephen, you know, it's a tremendous question, and I don't have an answer for it. I know there are many friends of mine courageously on the front lines of the pro-life movement, and there are many of them also against birth control in general for other reasons. But that's a fair question to ask and present a compelling argument. Thank you, Stephen.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. We're talking about how the rising tide of the pro-life movement is revealing the moral and intellectual bankruptcy of the pro-abortion movement. To read my entire article on that, which is posted this morning, go to AskDrBrown.org and click on the latest article. At the same time, a Pew Research report from earlier this year indicated that just 7 years ago, Americans felt that 28% of Americans felt that abortion was a critical issue, and today only 18%, and that still the clear majority of Americans say they don't want to see the complete overturn of Roe v. Wade. So even though things are moving forward, there is much work to be done. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to the phones. Leonard in Hazel, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome.
I've been a pharmacist for over 30 years, and I've always wondered. One issue has really bothered me over the years, and that's as Christians, we tend to believe that life begins at conception. Am I wrong, do you think?
Yeah, that would be the normal pro-life view among conservative Christians, that life begins at conception. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, then, in that case, why haven't we taken a stand against birth control pills? Now, birth control pills prevent the implantation of a fertilized egg as one of the modes of method for prevention of pregnancy. So, but as Christians, once we come to that point, we tend to stop. And what do you think of that?
I think it's a fair question to raise. I'm looking at the clock, and I'm thinking, to do this realistic justice, we need to have a whole discussion about the issue of birth control in general. Is it up to God to open and close the womb? And then what about abortion pills? I've had this raised to me in the past, and to be honest, I haven't focused on this. I've focused on the larger question of birth control in general, and then in particular in pro-life. But let's say this, Leonard, I will make a note that this is something to include when we do discuss at length the issue of birth control at all, and then the issue of what happens with an abortion pill. Now that there are the challenges to Obamacare with Hobby Lobby, Protestant groups, and then Catholic groups, and then they have different standards in terms of what they're refusing to pay in terms of with Obamacare, these issues are going to come up more and more. So I do not have a good answer for you. I'm going to put it on the shelf for now as something to come back to. Fair enough?
Fair enough. Thank you.
All right. Hey, friends, if I have good answers, I'll give them to you. If I don't, now there may be a good answer, but I don't have it off the top of my head. It hasn't been something relevant in my own family or our own lives, so I can't address it as something active in my thoughts right now, and therefore don't just want to give you a superficial throwaway answer. Let me grab one more call. George in Mount Holly, New Jersey, thanks so much for calling the Line of Fire.
Sure.
What I would like to share right away, I've been a sidewalk counselor for over 27 years. That means we go there in the morning and we use scripture, we offer them help, we take them right into our house and talk these ladies out of aborting their children. I go to the biggest one in South Jersey. This abortion mill, we had done a sit-in, nonviolent sit-in, back in 1988. They had 54 abortions scheduled, 8 were second trimester. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah. Well, they weren't even an ambulatory facility. That means they weren't even supposed to be doing 6 months. Now it's gone to the point where it's commonplace. Medicaid pays for these late-term abortions. They never would have them done. Mm. But we're seeing a phenomenon now where there's more and more later-term abortions. And the reason why is because the government's paying for it. Medicaid pays for it. If they don't have a ride there, there's medical transport that our taxpayers pays for. This is every day. 54 abortions in 1988, and it's going up in numbers. Every day we go out there, every chance we get. I got run over out there. I got a rod in my leg, you know, but that's a whole other story. But
let me just, George, jump in, though, and ask you a couple of questions really quickly.
Sure.
Are you there yelling and screaming at the women, or are you there simply offering to talk? Are you worshiping, praying? What are you doing there?
My wife and I both go out. There's two of them at Cherry Hill, and we're pleading with them not to, to kill their child. And at the same time, we lost two children, actually, my wife and I, to abortion. And we've been going out there. And it's the pictures of the aborted babies that open up our eyes. So we have the pictures of the aborted babies, and we're pleading with them. But what I want you to understand is the magnitude of this slaughter. The abortion machine in America is a fine-oiled machine where they got it now, where I talked to one of the death nurses. And I said, "How would you doing in here? Why are you working here? Oh, I can't get a job anywhere else. I prep them for surgery. I'm a nurse." I said, "Honey, they're doing them 6 months." She says, "They do them 8 months, but we have to provide a funeral." So the health department comes in and rubber stamps it. This is every day. They give it a lethal injection one day that kills the baby. Then the next day, then the baby is washed out of whatever method they do to remove the baby. This is every day, day in, day out. We had this one couple we talked out of an abortion, and she was 16 weeks, which was $1,100. All she had to pay was $10. They're college kids. We talked them out of it. We took them to breakfast. They kept their baby. They sent us a picture of their baby. But this fellow took a picture of their rate sheet, which shows from 8 weeks, $495, all the way down to 27 weeks, 26 weeks for $2,700. There's an increase, but it's a fine little machine, 40, 50 every day. And the church needs to stop being afraid of, oh, somebody's
young.
I might not be amazed. They're total babies. You know what I want to definitely leave you with, and this is to every Christian that's listening, and this is the word the Lord gave me, and I've been beat up, arrested, put in jail. And that's
real quick, because we're almost out of time. Real quick.
Let me share this real quick. You know Joe Paterno? He was from Penn State. He was the coach there, and he looked the other way while this guy Sandusky molested like a dozen kids. Were you familiar with that?
Yeah, of course. So, hey, George, I just got to jump in. We're looking the other way because I'm out of time. We're looking the other way as abortions are being committed all around this. I don't even know where they're happening. Exactly. George, keep up the good work. Be strong in the Lord. May God use you. May His grace be upon you. May you shine for Jesus. Call me another day. We'll talk some more, all right? Friends, stand with me. Stand with me as we are on the front lines in so many ways and touching on subjects a lot of folks are running from. We do need your support and help, but I want to thank you by sending you a tremendous debate between Dr. James White and myself on the issue of Calvinism, and it's conducted with a spirit of grace and civility. 2 hours and only $20 plus postage, but yours as my thank you gift for your gift of any size. So stand with us. Better still, become a monthly supporter at Torchbearer. Call 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today: life will triumph over death. Light will triumph over darkness. But God wants that triumph to come through you and through me.